to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I'm your guest host, Kyle Scheidler, filling in for the great Frank Gaffney, who is off today. Joining me now is David Goldman. He's the author of How Civilizations Die. He's best known for a series of essays at the Asia Times under the pseudonym Spangler, and really a man whose work I turn to whenever I'm trying to figure out all that's going on at the intersection of strategy and economy. David, thank you for joining us on Secure Freedom Radio.
Always my pleasure. Thanks.
So I wanted to talk to you about the recent situation in the stock market. You know, President Trump tweeted out something about how the failure to report all the good news about the economy had an impact on the stock market's downturn. Is that really true? I mean, is the stock market's downturn happening despite all the good going on in the U.S. economy, or was there something else at work?
The stock market has a problem, which is that valuations are extremely high. When you're paying 18 times forward earnings, expected earnings for a stock, which is what the S&P is trading at, you really want to be pretty sure you're going to get the earnings you're paying for. Over the past couple of weeks, we've had a lot of important earnings disappointments from market leaders. Started really with Daimler-Benz a week ago in Germany. Then it went through to UPS, Google, and so forth. A lot of the problem is U.S. companies and some global companies simply did not invest during the Obama recovery. They've got a huge amount of catch-up to do in terms of investing. That will eat into future profits in some cases. So uncertainty about future profits is going to take prices down a bit.
Is this a market correction that, in your view, is overdue?
Well, it's not so much overdue. We're in a late cycle. We've got growth booming all over the world. Production inputs, some of them are going to get a bit more costly. There's no way around that. So in some cases, for example, UPS helped take the market down. It was one of the worst performers in the past week. Said, you know, we're going to have to spend a lot of money on planes, a lot of money computerizing warehouses that you didn't anticipate, and that's going to eat into our profits. Bang, I got crushed. Google underperformed. That's a giant monopoly, and everyone's worried, both on buying Google at a very rich price, what happens if the monopoly pricing erodes? Google's been a market leader downwards. ExxonMobil and Chevron did very poorly. These are companies which did not meet investors' expectations about oil production. And it's simply the case that they haven't been buying equipment, they haven't been paying for capital investment at the level they did back in 2013, 2014, the last time production boomed. So they're going to run into some accidents. They'll undershoot performance. So selectively, you have market leaders lagging, and that casts doubt upon the stability of earnings in the market. But it's not a crash. It's simply maybe the market was a bit expensive.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the situation going on in China. The reaction we saw from the Shanghai Composite Index was not the same as what we saw from some of the other markets. And people have been talking for some time that there's a risk to what's going on in China economically, but we haven't really seen the effects from that. What we've seen is, in fact, a great deal of stability. Why is that? And is it something that will continue to go on moving forward?
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the performance of H shares, which were traded internationally, not the A shares in Shanghai, the Chinese financials are still up about 10% from the beginning of the year, the big banks and insurance companies, even though they gave back a good deal of their gains. The fact that the financials are outperformers does not indicate that we're dealing with a problem of systemic risk, because if the system were at risk, you'd see the financials taking the biggest hit. I think the problem with Shanghai is you just had a world stock market pullback. I don't know if correction is the right word. The Chinese are going into their Lunar New Year. Everyone's going to be off for 2 weeks. So you've got a lot of profit taking and clearing out of positions ahead of the home in response to an unknown risk overseas. Chinese economy is doing fine. There's no indication that they have any particular problems. All of the surveys based on satellite imagery and other hard data give pretty much the same picture that the government data do, that it's, you know, a solid 6% plus expansion.
Why do you think we see a difference between what you've described there, which makes sense to me, and what we've seen from some other China watchers, you know, who raise questions about state and local government debt for the Chinese, you know, over construction, some of these other issues? Why does it get reported that way?
China's a huge place. There are thousands of people who make a living reporting on China, and you get a huge spread of opinions. A couple of years ago, China risk was the mantra of every hedge fund manager. The thing that could bring the world economy down was China risk, China debt. It now appears that with profits rising, not a very good clip, double digits, Chinese companies are able to build down leverage. The deleveraging campaign of the Chinese government appears to be working gradually. So I think the risks have considerably diminished. As I said, if debt were the problem, if it were a debt bubble, you should see the Chinese banks performing the worst, and that hasn't been the case at all.
You know, one of the things that strikes me is I've seen a number of high-level defense officials here in the United States who have said, you know, tell me who the global economic leader is in the next 10 years, and I'll tell you who the superpower will be. And obviously, they're sort of hinting backhandedly about China. Where do we stand in terms of U.S. competition with China in the economic space? Are we ahead? Are we behind? What do we need to do?
The United States has lost an enormous amount of high-tech manufacturing capacity. American companies have followed what they like to call a capital-light approach, which is we let other people build the hardware, we build the apps. So the erosion of the American industrial base in high tech is a long-term alarming trend. For example, Cisco used to be the world leader in telecommunications equipment. They're practically out of that business. China's Huawei now has 70% of the market in telecommunications. Now, I think that's both a threat to national security, because if we can't deal with our own high-tech systems, they'll be hackable and fragile. And it's also a danger to our long-term economic health.
I want to pivot a little bit, still talking about strategy and the economy. You recently wrote a piece about the situation in Turkey. Turkey's economy, it seems to me, pretty dire straits. And the behavior we're seeing from the Turkish government and Erdogan in terms of expansionism and sort of adventurism in Syria, is it an attempt to offset that? Is that something that's sustainable? And ultimately, if it continues this way, does Turkey implode or do they explode?
Turkey is run by a typical third world dictator who prints money and makes a lot of loans and allows people to buy a lot of houses and cars and refrigerators to keep them happy. Now, Turkey has had some economic growth, but at the expense of a huge surge in imports and a very sharp widening of its trade deficit and a very fast rate of credit growth. That's not sustainable. You can't run a trade deficit of, you know, 7, 8, 9% of GDP, which is what they're doing now, forever. You know, you'd have to borrow the equivalent of your GDP every 10 years or so. So the question is, who is giving Turkey the money and how long could that go on? I think the probable answer is Turkey is getting a lot of financing from China and from Qatar, who mean us no good and would very much like to separate the Turks from NATO and encourage them to pursue a policy which is not friendly to us. And I think to some extent they're succeeding. The only good news you can say about Turkey is that Erdogan sometimes trips over his own shoelaces, so he gets himself into hot water, both with us, the Russians, and others. He's not a strategic genius, and he may end up solving his own problem by doing something really stupid.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. David Goldman, it's always a great pleasure to hear you lay things out for us so clearly. We appreciate it. We hope to have you back again soon. All right, coming up next, we'll be joined by Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy here on Secure Freedom Radio.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.